Okay, let me say at the outset that before we launch into the actual discussion of so-called maternal feminism, certain things need to be made clear. Above all, the fact that regardless of which wave it is, the name, the variant, it doesn't really matter. Feminism at its core, as I said, irrespective of the kind of feminism, is about acquiring benefits for the sake of women, in the very best case scenario, with complete indifference to the consequences and outcomes as they might affect men and greater society, but much more frequently with an act of hostility and desire to harm men in the process. So whatever the brand label, whatever the name, maternal feminism, second wave, third wave, it doesn't really matter. It really has always, without exception I can think of, at its core, that desire. Effectively, give me the goods. Give me the stuff, as I've said many times in the past. So given this fact, what exactly is maternal feminism? Well, maternal feminism is actually pretty old, all things considered. It goes way, way back to the earliest stages of feminism, first wave and the early 20th century, where feminists would argue from a quote-unquote maternal perspective, this idea that there's something unique and powerful, if you will, about motherhood. So they would argue basically that women's innate capacity for nurturing babies and young children led to a greater understanding of moral principles. And therefore, you could use that innate ability, that nurturing instinct to sort of guide greater society. And in light of this, they would push for a lot of things, just social reform. Many of the so-called maternal feminists were really, really big on prohibition, i.e. were part of the temperance movement. And for those of you who are not familiar with the temperance movement, it was basically a movement in the early 20th century and also in the 19th century to effectively suppress the consumption of alcohol. Now look, I don't think alcohol is great by any means. I'm not a fan. But we all know how prohibition ended. I think all of us know. It was a time of great violence, crime, the murder rate went up. It was not a really good idea. So in some sense, you could make the argument that the first maternal feminists were also a kind of Karen figure back in the day who were concerned trolling about the habits of men. Like I said, alcohol isn't good by any means, but going about it that way did not work out and never will. And there is a difference, however, between the maternal feminist and the so-called traditionalist, right? These traditionalist women who argue, you see them online these days, of course, that women feel best when they're simply caretakers of the home and this and that. Because maternal feminists, generally speaking, have this very pronounced view and conviction that women's innate inclinations, instincts, mothering abilities, however you want to term it all, somehow can be translated to public life. And so part of the ideology is that women should have a very important and powerful say in things like education, social work, public policy, government, this sort of thing. And of course, they supported women's suffrage, i.e. the right to vote, because women, in their eyes, are more compassionate, and they have this unique ability, again, in their eyes, to bring a particular moral compass to the public and political sphere that men simply lack. Now, as always the case, many feminists don't agree with so-called maternal feminists because they argue that maternal feminism reinforces traditional gender roles rather than challenging them and trying to stick it to men. Now, it could also, they argue, exclude women who are not mothers. And maternal feminism nurtures stereotypes that are harmful to women. And it's always the same thing. Give me the goods. Does it hurt women? Bad, maybe bad. And really, the devil is in the details, because when it comes to feminism, no matter what the shape or form or iteration, there will be bickering and conflict as well between so-called feminists. Because the fundamental question is, give me the goods, give me the stuff, how do we get the stuff, and how do we, quote-unquote, not harm women in the process? And to the extent that there's debate amongst feminists, and there is, it's always about that twofold question. Give me the stuff, how do we get the stuff, and is this form of feminism going to be harmful to women? Now notice, perniciously and persistently, that again, irrespective of the type of feminism, it is always piteously indifferent to the broader landscape of society, and specifically men, and whatever fallout effects it might have. And maternal feminism is, in this regard, no different than any other form of feminism. Now, this isn't the first time that there's been the suggestion that women have some unique insight on human existence due to their maternal instincts and their ability to take care of young babies and sucklings. This is, generally speaking, the perspective the law's traditionalists have as well. But as I said, the key difference is that traditionalists tend to be more of the stay-at-home types, whereas the maternal feminists combine this idea of they should stay at home and take care of the youngins, but on top of that, they should have a very, very pronounced say in public affairs and government. And these days, you don't hear too much about maternal feminism, except in one individual I can think of, a very loud individual these days, and that woman is Louise Perry. Now, Louise Perry is an English blogger slash vlogger. She has her own channel, and she writes stuff. That's how she makes her money. And she describes herself routinely as a so-called maternal feminist. And she has all of the checkbox qualities of such a being. For example, she also believes that women have a unique insight and contribution to make. And she also, just like the women back in the day during the temperance movement, has her own ideas about what should be done about various things in society, above all, prawn and prostitution. You see, Louise Perry advocates the view that prawns should be banned, outlawed, made illegal, just as prostitution, and or she argues that the Swedish model is the best model. Now, the Swedish model, in case you're not familiar with it, when it comes to professionalism, so to speak, is basically that if you are a pro, you do not get punished. There are no consequences for you, but the Johns do. So basically, you can do as much as you want in terms of being a pro, but if the Johns do it and get caught, they're in hot water. That's the idea. And she supports that idea, although ideally, I think she would be behind the idea of completely banning all sorts of prostitution, all forms of it, because that's her view when it comes to prawn. Now, the reason why she thinks this stuff and advocates this stuff is pretty simple. She's worried about women being hurt in the process. Again, every form of feminism is about give me the stuff for women, and it doesn't matter what happens to the rest of society, and specifically men. Now, what is a little bit odd about Louise Perry in this respect, I have to say, is she is a relatively young mother of two sons, I believe, at least one son, possibly two. I know she gave birth recently. And usually what happens, it might take a bit longer, but when a woman transitions from non-motherhood to motherhood, and she gives birth to male offspring, what happens, not always, but frequently, is she becomes more aware and more concerned about the welfare of males in general, not because she's concerned about unrelated males per se, but because she now has skin in the game, as it were, in the form of her sons. And she knows then that her sons will be affected by all the not-so-pleasant things out there in society, and she might take a greater interest then in promoting things that would be beneficial to her own offspring, in this case, her male offspring. But for whatever reason, this is lacking in Louise Perry. Thus far, at least publicly, she's not ever really, to my knowledge, advocated for men in any respect and doesn't really generally care that much about men and what happens to them. Again, this is, of course, subject to change, and maybe as her sons grow older and they become teenagers, that will change and her views on that might change. Who knows? But for the time being, she's still very much a classic maternal feminist. And the problem with maternal feminism, and let's be honest, there are lots of problems to be fair, but the specific problem I have, or the biggest problem, is this tacit assumption, this a priori assumption made by maternal feminists that somehow mothering instincts, the ability to nurture and take care of 1-, 2-, and 3-year-olds, somehow in some magical way transfers and translates into, I don't know, insight about public policy, governance, and greater society at large. I don't think there's much of a connection, to be perfectly honest and blunt. And we know this to some degree because we can observe this in the context of families, right? What happens when children pass a certain age? What happens when, for example, rambunctious sons transition from, say, 3, 4, 5 into 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? That's when the father takes on a much more significant role as somebody who establishes limits and sets boundaries and constrains the sons and or children in general, also daughters, in their behavior to a degree that women just typically do not. Women, on average, offer a lot more lassitude when it comes to their own children. And this, I think, would find its mirror image in, say, public life, because we see basically when it comes to very hard issues in terms of immigration, in terms of spending, in terms of all sorts of political and economic affairs, women typically don't think about the big picture, the nuts and bolts, but they think about it from a very emotional perspective, as befits somebody who takes care of young offspring, obviously. And this goes hand in hand with this notion of maternal feminism being specifically just better at handling certain issues and affairs. That's true when you're a two-year-old, I guess. But it also demonstrates that those skills don't really have a lot of application to the greater world at large. Now, I plan on making a separate video on the potential side effects and risks of banning PRAWN. I doubt it's going to ever happen, but who knows? It's worth talking about. But these sorts of prescriptions and ideas ultimately are probably not going to get much traction in greater society. And maternal feminism, at the end of the day, is fundamentally not that different from other forms of feminism. It just sort of adds more woo to it. You know, a lot of women are big on their woo and mysticism. This is also a form of mysticism. The mysticism of maternal feminism being, look, hey, we take care of young children, we give birth, therefore we have special powers of insight and special powers of awareness that if galvanized can turn society into this great blooming garden, right? That's the idea behind it. But in reality, it's just another version of give me the stuff, give me the goods, and are men harmed in the process? Who cares? Or in many cases, are men harmed? Great. Anyway, as always, thank you for tuning in. Many special thanks to my very generous patrons on Patreon and my generous donors on PayPal. You guys are the best. Without you, this channel simply could not exist. Thank you so much. And if you engage in the usual YouTube jazz of liking the video, sharing the video, leaving a comment, subbing to me, be much appreciated. As allegedly it helps out with the algorithm. If I'm still alive, I'll check you out then. Until the next time, may the gods truly watch over you. Bye-bye for now. If you liked this video, please like, share, and subscribe. And if you enjoy my content, please consider making a donation or becoming a patron. Thanks for watching.